They should be the most innocent members of society. But children can be capable of the most horrific, premeditated, and violent murders.
I thought they are so sadistic what they've done to my son. Evil. Just pure evil.
What drives these children to kill strangers, their family, even their closest friends?
I have completely blocked him out of my life. I've pretended like he has died along with Ellie.
With access to police officers and their evidence.
Charging a 16-year-old with murder is heartbreaking. Because they are children, they are kids.
And the insight of a leading criminologist.
When you render your victim less human, it's much easier for you to be able to attack and kill them.
We ask if they're victims of their environment, or are they born evil?
What sort of person can do that?
We hear first-time testimony from the families of innocent victims.
They're scumbags, through and through, and I hope they have a terrible time in jail, which they should, being child killers.
As they reveal the devastating impact of losing a loved one.
20 minutes that role took her to go. And she died in my arms.
The rolling countryside of Wiltshire. Nestled in its heart is the sleepy town of Carn. On the morning of Friday the 3rd of May 2019, 17-year-old Thomas Griffiths left a nearby bus station. He was seen again 10 minutes later on a bus bunking off school. No one knew it, but he was about to commit a horrific murder.
The type of assault that this was, and the ferocious nature of it, you know, how could a 17-year-old do that to someone else?
The body of 17-year-old schoolgirl Ellie Gould would be found by her devastated father.
And she was cold. She was very cold. She was stiff. I couldn't really move her.
Thomas Griffiths strangled his ex-girlfriend in her kitchen. Then he savagely stabbed her 13 times in a killing that would shock the nation.
How could you put your hands around somebody's neck and squeeze as they're fighting you off until they take their last breath and then pick up a knife
and stab somebody 13 times
in the neck? What sort of person can do that? They are sick, sick in the head.
Griffiths then made a childish attempt to make it look like a suicide.
Tom cleaned the knife in the sink, and then he placed the knife back into Ellie while she was already dead.
How did this quiet boy, a school prefect and keen sportsman, turn into a savage killer?
Yeah, he was just completely normal. You would never have thought he could even hurt a fly.
It's the tragedy of a young man who doesn't have the emotional maturity to deal with rejection.
We carry the pain of losing Ellie every day of our lives. We wake up in the morning and it's the first thing you think about, and you carry that pain every single day.
In this idyllic part of rural southwest England, 17-year-old Ellie Gould had a bright future ahead of her.
Yeah, she was on the brink of adulthood. She was blossoming into this beautiful young lady. She's working hard at school, studying hard for A-levels. She just got herself a little job waitressing with the National Trust, and she was learning to drive. She was looking at universities.
Ellie attended Harden Hewish School in Chippenham with her group of close friends.
Something just jumped out to me. Like, she was just so quirky. Like, there was just something about her that you just fell in love with her instantly, really.
She was just so real with everyone.
She was just Ellie all the time. And she was so funny, so bubbly. Everyone loved her. We didn't become proper friends until the start of sixth form in 2018. But right from the outset, you knew she was a lovely person. She'd always talk to anyone.
Ellie, her friends, they were at a really lovely school called Harden Hewish. I think a couple of years ago, Tatler magazine said, would recommend that you'd send your child to that comprehensive. It is a comprehensive, but an outstanding one. So really nice people, you know, quite an affluent area.
Wiltshire's a very safe place to live. It's one of the safest counties in the country. It's got some thriving communities. Homicides in Wiltshire are fairly rare.
But on the 3rd of May 2019, the unthinkable did happen here when Ellie Gould was strangled and stabbed to death.
They trusted Thomas Griffiths. He'd been in the kitchen just a few months earlier celebrating Ellie's 17th birthday, and then he took her life in that kitchen.
This whole case is tragic. You know, the two people involved are in a point in their lives where they've got the whole lives ahead of them.
Go.
Ellie had a happy childhood.
She was very much like a mother. she was just a lovely... my father would always say that, a lovely child. Knew her own mind from a very young age, very determined. Yeah, she was great fun, and she obviously grew up into a beautiful, kind, loving young lady.
As a youngster, she developed a passion for horse riding.
She had some lessons, and then she got hooked, and then started to become, quite a good rider, I suppose, for a youngster.
Sort of a trust in a horse and being gentle with a horse and an understanding of the horse.
And being fearless as well, I think. You could see that she sat on the horse extremely well, really well balanced.
Timing.
And ultimately, fearless.
And it led to thoughts of a career.
She wanted, at a time, to join the police force, the mounted police, again, because of her love of horses. So she wanted to work with animals.
It was a conversation we had. She used to like watching documentaries, solving cases. Mm. And she said to me, I know, that's what I want to do. I want to join the police and solve investigations. She said, I really love it.
I will tap your head.
Fatefully, in January 2019, she started dating Thomas Griffiths, a classmate at her school. He was her first ever serious boyfriend.
And she said to me one day when she came home from school, oh, Mum, my boy's asked me out. And I said, oh, that's nice. Do you know him? How do you know him? Oh, well, he's friends of some of the boys.
Ellie had been chasing him for a few months before they actually got together. So they had sort of been on and off, or at least been in contact for a while before they actually became an official relationship.
To Ellie, Griffiths was a real catch. Little did she or any of her friends know that this quiet boy would turn into a brutal killer.
Normal, honestly. He was just your normal boy. Yeah, he was just completely normal. You would never have thought he could even hurt a fly.
I think we only saw the quiet side of him because maybe he was intimidated by the big personalities in our group. But she told us that he was a lot more caring and open and louder and funnier and more outgoing when he was with her.
There was no indication to us that he could go on and hurt anyone. There was no indication from his background, from our investigations, that would make us think that he was going to turn into a murderer.
Ellie's mum and dad said nothing at the time, but they did have reservations about Griffiths.
I wouldn't have paired him with Ellie.
No.
I'd say that. They were, to me, it just seemed like a mismatch. I couldn't see what she found fun about him or why she wanted to be with him. So that was odd to me, but I just thought it would run its course.
Griffiths' mother worked in a school supporting kids with special educational needs.
We don't know anything about his family. All we know that his mum is a Senko teacher at a primary school in Chippenham. Obviously, she's had professional training to spot traits in children. So we find it hard to believe that she didn't spot anything in her own son.
Thomas Griffiths was known to be a good student and a school prefect. He even excelled at sport.
People who are performing sport at that level have often been trained to hide their emotions. They perform in the moment. Nothing else matters in the moment other than their desire to win. And I wonder if some of those things might give us an insight into his personality.
Griffiths was doing well at school and had a happy family life. There were few clues as to why he would soon commit such a brutal murder.
There's a tiny minority of murderers that I've worked with, whom I would describe as being deeply unknowable. There's literally nothing that I can find out about them or that they're prepared to talk about, which would explain their actions. And I rather get the impression that Thomas Griffiths fits into that pattern. He's deeply unknowable.
I could partly understand it if it was somebody that had been dragged up through the care system, who had been rejected, who felt unloved, but Griffiths had everything. He had a stable upbringing, supportive parents, everything he wanted, but he couldn't take rejection. Just a spoilt monster, an evil monster.
In the sleepy Wiltshire town of Carn, 17-year-old Ellie Gould had dreams of university and then a career with the police. But those dreams were cut cruelly short in May 2019 when she was strangled and stabbed 13 times by the boy she'd been dating for just 3 months.
I couldn't comprehend why or how anyone could do that to another human being. Now, why would he have...
And to somebody that he was supposedly fond of?
Ellie Gould lived in the town of Carn and Griffiths nearby in the village of Derry Hill, both a short bus ride to their school in Chippenham.
I've been a journalist here in the West Country for 20 years, and the majority of stories I've done in Wiltshire, it's a rural place, it's really beautiful. You wouldn't describe it as sleepy, but it's, quite affluent pockets. The crime rate is very low because there's not any huge city or town. It's a beautiful place.
Only with hindsight are there any clues to Griffith's troubled personality.
Looking back now, you can always look back and you think maybe it was a bit weird that he was quiet and didn't open himself up to people. But you can always look back and you can think maybe this was a sign.
Well, from my point of view, when he came and ate with us a few times, he had nothing really to say. Didn't hold his knife and fork properly. He's just a bit slovenly around the table. Yeah, I do. He sit at the table properly. But he didn't. Nothing much to say. He wasn't outgoing enough.
In the months prior to the murder, members of Griffith's family had both been ill, but he seemed reluctant to discuss it with anyone.
There was a period of a week where his dad had to remain in hospital and have some form of treatment every day. And I remember saying to him, is that radiotherapy? And he said, no, I don't know. I can't remember what it's called. I don't know. And I just thought then, that's a bit odd.
There are a lot of surface factors going on in Griffiths' background prior to him committing murder. I mean, we know, for example, that his father was having treatment for cancer. His grandmother had died. He's preparing for his mocks. But that, to me, doesn't provide him with an excuse to kill. Every young man, and lots of young women too, are going to experience exactly the same circumstances as Thomas Griffiths, but that doesn't lead them to go on to kill.
But he wasn't a big character that you could say, yes, these are the character like traits that he has and he is this type of person. He was quite a closed book, I feel.
I didn't think they were a match made in heaven, but I'm not the type of person to judge someone on who they choose to date. I think if someone's happy, and Ellie did seem happy, I was happy for her. You know, whether I thought Tom was punching, if you will. I don't think I would ever say, you know, their relationship was an odd match, because I think she was happy, he was happy at the time, and just seeing Ellie happy just made me happy for her.
But in the spring, schoolwork intensified and mock exams loomed large on the horizon. Ellie was starting to wonder if she really was happy.
I just remember her mentioning to me how she didn't like the sort of... She wanted to be able to focus on herself and her friends and A-levels. I just think she got fed up with him having to see him every night or him getting grumpy if they didn't see each other. And I just think she realised herself, you know, I don't want to be in this situation.
He'd started talking about marriage and kids and things that had made her realise that he thought about it so much more seriously than she did. And she told me that she would look back on her teenage years and she would regret being tied down by someone for so long.
The thought of marriage at such a young age horrified Ellie. The beginning of a new school week saw her confide in her close friend Harriet.
We sat down during one of our free periods and we spoke about it. And she told me all of her feelings and how she just felt weighed down by him and she didn't want to be with him anymore. But we weren't alarmed by how he would react to that. She was confident that she would be able to tell him how she felt and he would accept that.
Sensing he was losing Ellie, though, Griffiths became more possessive.
On the Thursday morning, we all went into school as normal and I came back from one of my lessons at lunchtime and all of the group were sat around our table in the study room playing a game. We all stood up laughing and obviously I went and joined in.
Our group's a bit silly and we decided we were going to play Hungry Hippos live action. And so someone was throwing like M&Ms or something silly like that into the air and the whole group were jumping onto the table trying to get them as quick as you can. And Ellie was trying to get involved and you could sort of see from the outside that Tom was sort of trying to hold her back, trying to make sure she was sat with him and that sort of thing. And I think that was another, well, from my point of view, it just looked like him holding on for dear life to the relationship and wanting the attention that she perhaps wasn't giving him. And you could see she was getting annoyed. She was sort of shrugging him off, sort of that sort of thing, and moving away from him.
It convinced Ellie that she had to end it. So that evening, she talked to her mum.
And in my head, I had those warning signs that this is somebody becoming quite possessive, which is why I said to her, Ellie, you don't want to go out with somebody like that. And she said, no, I don't, Mum, I'm not. Don't worry, she said, I'm going to sort it. And I said, well, what are you going to do? And she went, it's fine, Mum, I'll sort it.
Ellie texted Griffiths, telling him it was over.
So she broke up with him the Thursday evening, and this is all through social media again, but she was just saying how he was denying it, saying, no, we're not going to break up. Like, you don't want actually, this isn't what's good for us. Like, we should just stay together.
He was sort of, you know, begging her, begging to have her back, that sort of thing, saying that they needed each other, they loved each other, that sort of thing.
But Ellie had made her decision. Griffiths didn't take the news well, and the next morning he decided to confront her.
He walked into the common room, supposedly, asked around, said to somebody, does anyone know where Ellie is? And I think somebody said, I think she's coming in at lunchtime with Ellie Welling because they've got no lessons this morning. She's at home revising.
So Griffiths walked out of school to Chippenham bus station. He's seen on CCTV on a bus which pulled up around 200 yards from his home.
And what we do know then is that he said he took a bus home. And that element of his story was absolutely true. We've got CCTV on that bus of him coming home, but what that showed us is the clothing that he was wearing.
Griffiths got home to an empty house and changed his clothes. But he was disturbed.
His mother came home and he didn't want to get caught out by his mother about not going to school. So he hid in the wardrobe in his bedroom.
After his mother had left, he took her car keys and, despite not having passed his test, drove away.
We were able to say that just before 11 o'clock on Friday, that his phone changed masts from near his home address in Derry Hill to a cell site mast in Calne. And that was the first piece of evidence that we had to suggest he wasn't at home at that point.
Griffiths had left school, gone home and changed, hidden from his mother, stolen her car and driven to Ellie's home. What happened next would send shockwaves through the community and shatter her friends and family.
So at the end of that process, we're all walking away, scratching our head to think how a 17-year-old boy has murdered someone who he said he loved and a classmate of years in such a traumatic and horrific way.
17-year-olds Thomas Griffiths and Ellie Gould were both A-level students at Harden Hewish School in Chippenham, Wiltshire. She lived in Carn on a quiet residential street. He was from Derry Hill, a village perched on the A4 between the two towns. They'd been an item for just 3 short months.
She was very happy to be with him. I think she felt maybe a sense of achievement that she had managed to end up with the guy that she'd been wanting to be with for quite a while.
But in early May, Ellie ended their relationship to concentrate on her mocks. No one could have predicted what Griffiths would do next.
He apparently wanted to see Ellie to talk to her about the relationship, to try and resume it, to persuade her otherwise. If that was genuine, he would have just stayed on that bus and come through to Calm. Instead, he chose to go home, change his clothes. He had a black sweatshirt on in the morning and white trainers, but he changed his black sweatshirt into a black hooded top, and he also changed his white trainers into black canvas shoes. It was a warm day. There was no reason to put warmer clothes on. The weather hadn't changed. His mother came home and he hid in the wardrobe from her. That's odd behaviour. When his mother left, he jumped in his car and he drove illegally to our house.
It was a 7-minute drive to Ellie Gould's house where she was revising. She'd arranged for one of her friends to take her to school later that morning.
It got to about 11 o'clock, I believe, and I got a message from her saying, don't worry about picking me up, I'm just going to revise from home today, which was quite common for Ellie. I think it didn't alarm me at all. It was very, you know, she hated history. We both did.
Ellie was not heard from again.
I think it was around 3 o'clock, maybe 4. I did get a strange message from Tom saying that he'd been self-harming. He had sent the group chat a message saying, oh, I'm, as you all know, me and Ellie aren't together anymore, going on about that. And then he said that he was self-harming and that he wasn't feeling himself and that he had been scratching his neck and he had scratches all over his neck. And he just wanted to let us know because we're all his best friends. And obviously, as you would, we all said, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. You know, I said, I'm always here for you if you ever need to talk.
At around 3 p.m, Ellie's dad came home from work.
So I pull up in the drive, Ellie's car, a small red car that she was learning to drive and was on the drive. So I come into the house, walk into the kitchen, put my phone and wallet down on the table. And then from the corner of my eye, I see Ellie's legs on the kitchen floor. Island unit in the middle and, you know, her legs just poking out from the side of it. First thoughts were, she's fallen. She's fallen, she's banged her head and she's hurt herself. I bend down to see if she's okay. And she was cold. She was very cold. She was stiff. I couldn't really move her. So I thought she'd climbed up onto the worktop to get something out of the cupboard. And fallen and banged her head. Then I take two and I see there's a lot of blood splatters around that end of the kitchen, which wouldn't have come from a fall. But I couldn't compute then whether, you know, what had happened. I was panicked. So I immediately rang for an ambulance. They tried to tell me how to resuscitate her. And I told them that it was pointless. I believe she was dead. Yeah, it was horrific.
Dad Matt immediately called Carol.
Said Ellie's hurt herself and I need her help. I didn't
You're
really
quite
want
hysterical.
To.
You said Ellie's had an accident, Carol. You need to come home. Drive carefully. Ellie's had an accident. Mm. They were the words I remember.
Mm.
And I could tell by your voice it was... You can never imagine what you're going to walk into. And I pulled around the corner towards our house and there were just police cars abandoned everywhere, an ambulance on the drive, various police cars, and then just you just sobbing at the end of the drive. And I got out the car because I couldn't get near our house because there were too many vehicles. And I ran towards Matt and said, "What's happened? What's happened?" And you couldn't really speak to me, could you? And I think you said, "She's dead, she's dead." And it was just like, what? How? What's happened?
Ellie Gould died that day in the kitchen, the same kitchen Griffiths had sat and eaten in with her family.
We sat in the police station, didn't we, in that family suite, just stunned, just trying to... What has happened? Disbelief, just complete disbelief.
Ellie had been strangled and had 13 separate stab wounds to her neck.
We were able to say that there was a significant compression of her neck. Location of the stab wounds, of which there were at least 13 in the left side of the neck, suggested that the likelihood is that she was incapacitated from that compression of the neck, from that strangling. And that the wounds caused were catastrophic. There would have been very little anyone could have done.
He uses overkill. Now, by that, I mean he uses more attack. He attacks her more than is necessary to actually kill her. And usually when I'm dealing with issues of overkill, that implies that the person is out of control. They're definitely not in control at the moment they are committing murder.
The murder weapon was a knife from the Goulds' own kitchen set. But forensics noticed something unusual.
The position that Ellie was found in was she was found face down in the kitchen. She was laying on her front and the knife that was used was still inside her neck at the point she was found by her father. What the officers were able to say was that Ellie's hand was on the knife. Her right hand was on the knife, so it was across her body, and it was holding onto the knife. So she was lying face down, she was lying on her arm, and her hand was on the knife.
Suicide was quickly ruled out by detectives, and the hunt for Ellie's murderer began.
Most homicides in a domestic setting are generally committed by people they know. 70% of female victims of homicides are known to the offender.
Door-to-door inquiries immediately proved fruitful and focused suspicion on just one individual.
We knew that a neighbour had seen someone approach the front door of the premises, and the description of that person fitted the partner of Ellie Gould, Tom Griffiths.
Griffiths had been dropped at a friend's house in Carn that evening by his mum.
And when he was seen by officers, he was displaying marks, fresh marks down his face, which looked like scratch marks. And they looked like classic defence wounds. And based on that, and quite rightly, he was arrested on suspicion of murder of Ellie Gould.
They said, "We've arrested somebody and we have an update. We're investigating a murder."
Mm.
I remember just feeling like I'd been thrown against the wall, just the shot. Murder. And we both said, who would murder Ellie? Who would come into the house and murder her? And that's when the police officer said, most of these cases, it's somebody that's known to them. And we just looked at each other and said, it's the boyfriend, isn't it?
Mm.
It's that Griffiths, it's the boyfriend.
Griffiths had no intention of admitting his crime and denied being near Ellie's home that day.
His initial kind of response upon being arrested is my girlfriend okay? I haven't seen her today. So it is immediately already starting to lay the foundation stones of his lies and deceit.
But detectives had a number of leads that would prove too convincing for Griffiths to deny.
We looked at his mobile phone, and it was a smartphone with location services which were enabled. And what that told us was that Thomas left his home address at between 10:45 and 11, and around just before 11 o'clock that he arrived at Ellie's home address, and he stayed there until 11:51.
Detectives then started their trawl of local CCTV, including from buses travelling between Ellie's house and Griffith's home.
We obtained footage of a silver Fiesta from a bus. And we had to perfect reading of the vehicle registration number of that Ford Fiesta, and of course it came back as Tom's. So we now had absolute categorical evidence that he had been driving back at the material time. That again was shown to him in an interview. He said, "Wasn't me driving."
And the evidence didn't stop there.
We found a pair of trainers at Thomas's house. They were fast-tracked immediately to our forensic labs. There was a perfect DNA match for Ellie.
When Ellie's phone was examined, detectives found the text that was sent to her friend Ellie Welling, telling her she wasn't coming to school that day.
We suspect that Tom sent that message in efforts to be not discovered and for her body not to be discovered. And again, that's quite chilling if you think about it.
After just a weekend of investigation, detectives were convinced they had the killer and charged Thomas Griffiths with murder.
So at the end of that process, we're all walking away, scratching our head to think how a 17-year-old boy has murdered someone who he said he loved and a classmate of years in such a traumatic and horrific way.
Griffiths would still not admit the killing, but charging him gave detectives time to uncover even more evidence.
When we did some further digital forensics and looked at Thomas's Wi-Fi router, we could see when he came back from Ellie's house. And what we saw within about an hour of him returning was that he left the house for about 18 minutes. Again, his phone dropped off the router and reconnected 18 minutes later. And where Thomas lived was nearby woods and pathways leading to those woods. And the police search team did an exact walk of 9 minutes from his front door out into those woods on a footpath. And almost precisely 9 minute walk away, they located a black bag. And in that black bag contained blood-stained tea towels and washing up cloths.
It was Ellie's blood on the cloths. It was compelling evidence. But Griffiths still refused to confess to Ellie's murder.
He says he lost control to the point he has no recollection of what happened. And his next recollection was that he had stabbed her and she lay dead.
17-year-old Ellie Gould was found dead on her kitchen floor by her father. She'd been strangled and stabbed in the neck 13 times. By the time her friends found out what had happened, her boyfriend and their school friend was already in custody.
I got a call from my dad saying, can you come home? The police are here. And I got home and my mum opened the door and we all sat in the living room and they asked me a few questions about Ellie. And then they just... I can't remember exactly how they said it, but they just went, Ellie Gould is dead. And I just burst into tears and my mum burst into tears. And that's when it hit me. That's when I realised Tom's done something.
Over the weekend, news that something had happened spread over social media.
So I just sort of woke up around, I think it's around 10-ish. I sort of went onto Facebook and started looking at all these articles that had come out. And I thought, okay, Springfield Drive is where Ellie lives. And so I was sort of thinking, what's her house number? What is her house number? And then I decided to message her. I messaged her the most ridiculous message. I said, you're not dead, are you? And then, and then we started up.
It didn't hit me as hard until a couple days later when I realised, oh God, it was him, that sort of thing. And because I think I was too focused on the fact that Ellie was dead that it didn't even hit me that hard to think that it was Tom.
I think the police said to me when they were doing my... when I was doing my statement, I said, have you got anybody? And I think they said that they'd arrested a teenage boy on suspicion. I thought, there aren't many teenage boys that would want to take a 17-year-old girl's life. And I thought, it's Tom, isn't it?
Thomas Griffiths was arrested at a friend's house in Carn on Friday the 3rd of May. That Sunday, the 17-year-old was charged with the murder of Ellie Gould.
There was no red flags, no warning signs that he was so angry that he was going to come and do what he did, which is what makes him so dangerous.
Griffiths appeared at Bristol Crown Court for a plea hearing. In his defence statement, he admitted responsibility for Ellie's death, but denied murder, saying he couldn't remember how or why he killed her.
He says he lost control to the point he has no recollection of what happened, and his next recollection was that he had stabbed her and she lay dead. I find it hard to believe that he didn't know why he'd killed her. And the almost easy and petulant way to get out of having to explain yourself and take full responsibility for what you've done is to say, I can't remember. Sorry, I can't remember.
I want somebody who's killed to be able to explain their behaviour and to have taken the appropriate steps with qualified people whilst in custody to ensure that they will never engage in that behaviour again. And that's why ultimately people who've killed have to start talking about why they did what they did so that we can work with them to stop them committing that kind of crime again.
He's the only one who can say exactly what happened. And one day I really do hope he has the courage and the humility, I think, as well, to tell the Goulds exactly what happened so that they know.
Griffiths returned to court in November to be sentenced. Ellie's friends and family were there that day.
Disbelief that there was a young man standing in his prom suit, which had such a different meaning a year ago, was capable of such a monstrous crime. He wasn't some big, beefy, violent-looking man. He was some weedy little kid, but with a very sick mind. It was hard to look at him, but I stared him out the whole time, and he just kept his head down, the little coward. He would not look up.
You're sitting there as a journalist thinking, how do these two characters match? How did this happen? It wasn't that he was in care. It wasn't that he was from a really rough, broken family. You feel that, he was from a stable family. He had an amazing schooling. He had friends. As a journalist, you always are looking for, I wonder why he did that. What was the motivation?
During the hearing, Griffiths' barrister delivered a character reference.
And I know all of us that were there were so angry at how his attorney painted him out as a good person. A good person doesn't kill someone, especially someone that is valued by so many people and someone that you're supposed to love. And we were so angry that they were trying to make excuses for him. There was no excuse.
The court learned that Griffiths had never been in trouble before, that he'd recently been made a prefect, that he'd played rugby for the school and completed his Duke of Edinburgh award. Griffiths' family illnesses and approaching exams were also included to explain his apparent stress. The judge that day had to consider whether or not the murder was premeditated.
So there's quite clear premeditation, it seems to me, in terms of him going round to Ellie's. But in the crime itself, that seems to be much more in a frenzy. That seems to be much more spur of the moment.
It does lend itself to think that it's premeditated, but you can't prove it. We couldn't prove it. You know, the knife that was used was a knife that was from Ellie's house, so he hadn't taken a knife to the scene, or not the one that we could prove was taken to the scene.
The judge handed down a 12-and-a-half-year sentence.
How can one person cause so much damage, complete devastation to us, Ellie's family, such deep emotional scarring to all her friends, to our friends, to the wider community, cause so much damage to so many people, and the punishment for that is 12-and-a-half years. It's wrong.
They were very disappointed. They wanted longer. They were, you know, Carol very much was like, this is just heartbreaking. So it was never going to be a good day, even if he'd been put away forever. It was still never the outcome. The only outcome they want is they want their daughter back, and that's just never going to happen.
Griffith's sentence reflected the fact that in law, he's treated as a child, not an adult. Ellie's parents have been campaigning tirelessly to have that law changed.
Somebody a day off their 18th birthday cannot be treated in the same way as a 10-year-old in terms of sentencing. And I'm just flabbergasted that a high court judge and top barristers in this country think that that was correct. It just does not make sense.
And Ellie's closest friends have launched their own campaign.
We have definitely felt it our duty to keep her legacy alive. Her name needs to be spoken about. She was a wonderful person, and we have launched a campaign in her name to try and have self-defence lessons put into the mandatory national curriculum.
If we can stop this sort of pain happening to anybody else, we will try our hardest. We would never want anybody to go through the suffering that we've been through.
Thomas Griffiths could be eligible for parole by mid-2029. He'll still be under 30.
I don't even want to think about it. It terrifies me to think that he could be let out. It absolutely terrifies me.
I think I am worried about that day because obviously I don't know how I'll react to it if I do end up ever bumping into him. I wouldn't be able to predict my actions because I have completely blocked him out of my life. I've pretended like he has died along with Ellie.
Though she's gone, Ellie will never be forgotten.
There's a memorial at our sixth form in the courtyard. We got to design it with Carol and our head teacher. It's a foal laying down in, surrounded by flowers. And there's a plaque that says, I've lived my life of joy and fun. Live on now, make me proud of what you'll become. Because as the type of person Ellie was, she would want everyone to continue and to be happy and live like she did.
We didn't really realise how much she touched other people's hearts until we got the letters from a lot of the school children that didn't even know her, sent us little notes. And one sticks out that said, I didn't really know Ellie. But whenever she passed me in the corridor, she always smiled. And I wasn't a confident person, but it made my day. Mm. And I think that was the sort of person she was. She was, you know, she wanted everyone to be happy and she just smiled at them. And there were no edges to her, really.
I remember her as this lovely, bubbly girl. And she brings sunshine into my life, really. I've actually got a tattoo of a sunflower on my arm because it reminds me of her. And I think that's how I remember her, just as this bright, yellow, bubbly little thing.
We carry the pain of losing Ellie every day of our lives. We wake up in the morning and it's the first thing you think about. And you carry that pain every single day. And you try and carry on with life as best you can, but the pain will never go.